Hello, and welcome to Ox Talk on Tuesday, the 24th of March, 2026. My name is Bridget, and I'll be compiling this week's edition, in which you will hear a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers, chosen and read by Bridget Dool and Patricia Lee. Copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Loffel. Before we start, here is some information on how to listen to Ox Talk on your Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access Ox Talk online. Additionally, in case it's useful to you, here are the sunrise and sunset times. Remember, the clocks will go forwards this Sunday. So the times this week will range from 6:01 on Monday 23rd of March to 6:44 on Sunday 29th of March. And the sunset times this week will range from 18:23 on Monday 23rd of March to 19:34 on Sunday 29th of March.
Notice to listeners of Oxhawk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to Oxhawk on an Alexa device, you can use the Talking Newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill. To do this, simply say, "Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper." Then, to listen to Oxhawk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to Oxtalk using an Alexa device, it could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Oxtalk and we will try to help.
New parking restrictions have been proposed by the County Council for the roads around the new Botley Westway Centre. Planning permission for the major new mixed-use development west of Oxford, designed to reinvigorate Botley as a residential and shopping centre, came with the condition of new traffic measures when it was granted in 2016. Parking controls are proposed to prevent overspill traffic and parking on surrounding residential streets and to stop all-day parking by commuters or visitors to the area. Oxfordshire County Council has now launched a consultation on parking restrictions proposed for a number of roads around the Westway development. Under the proposals, new residence permits holders parking only would be introduced on most of the roads in the area. This would apply between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. Monday to Saturday and would allow permit holders to park on unrestricted parts of the highway. Outside of these hours, non-permit holders would be free to park for a limited time. People who live and specify in specific properties on all of the above roads would be able to apply for annual residence permits, limited to one per resident, with a maximum of two per household, which would cost £80 for a year. Visitors' permits would be free for residents aged 70 or over, and for other residents, the first block of 25 would be free and the second charged at £31.50.
Annalisa Dodds has thrown her weight behind a campaign to save the Ultimate Picture Palace cinema. Bosses for the cinema say its future is under threat by the landlord Oriel College, part of the University of Oxford, which is not willing to extend the lease. Instead, they want to include the Grade 2 listed building in their fifth quad development plans, when the lease expires in 2037. Thousands of people have signed a petition within hours of its launching. Among those who have backed the campaign is Oxford East MP Annalisa Dodds, who was at a rally on Thursday afternoon to show support. She said, "The Ultimate Picture Palace is historically unique, culturally groundbreaking, and much loved by local people. I hope Oriel College will seek to work with UPP so the cinema's future can be secured for the long term in its distinctive building right in the heart of East Oxford. This would be a win-win for local people, many of whom supported the cinema in its community ownership bid, and the university as well as other local institutions." Jared Smith, spokesman for Oriel College, said there are no plans to demolish the cinema. He added, "We have no plans to extend the lease at this early stage in the tenancy."
A significant number of jobs have been lost at Oxford's mini plant, and it's been claimed that this is over electric cars. The previous Conservative government committed to phasing out the sale of petrol and diesel new cars in the UK by 2030. It left manufacturers such as BMW, which owns Mini, looking at expanding their electric vehicle offering. Electric Mini Coopers are currently produced in China, not Oxford, via a joint venture, while the electric Countryman is built in Germany. No electric cars are being made in Cowley right now, and no specific date has been given when electric vehicle production will start at the Cowley Works with the £600 million redevelopment. Senior City Councillor Linda Smith has described the automotive sector as being in the midst of a low-volume crisis, saying it would not be an exaggeration to say that the mini plant Oxford has been and continues to be one of the worst hit. The Labour councillor will call on the City Council to write to Transport Secretary Heidi Alexander to come to Cowley and meet factory representatives and the union. Ms Smith wants the Government Cabinet Minister to hear their concerns and to support their work to make Oxford the future home of affordable EV production. She is scheduled to say, "As one of the biggest employers in Oxford, a significant number of agency workers' jobs have been lost as the plant adjusts to the government reinstating the 2030 ban date on the new internal combustion engine, ICE, models, the only models the plant currently builds. In addition, and there being no electric models being manufactured at Plant Oxford, the increased zero emission vehicle target for 2026 will potentially create a situation whereby ICE production will need to be artificially lowered to ensure BMW can hit the 33% via imports, or it will be subject to either a £12,000 fine per car or pushed into buying credits from original equipment manufacturers such as Tesla." She added, "It is especially important that the Department of Transport understands the impact of policies like the zero emission vehicle mandate on jobs in Oxford. Calls have frequently been made by the motor industry to scrap the deadline to ban diesel and petrol cars. Fossil fuel powered cars continue to dominate the UK new car market, with EV infrastructure, news reporting, with EV infrastructure news reporting battery-powered cars only make up 23.4% market share. Trade Association, the Society of Motor Manufacturers and Traders, described the zero emissions vehicle mandate as a straitjacket, which is putting a huge pressure on manufacturers. It called for a review of the programme to be brought forward to ensure the supply of EVs matches demand. In line with government policy, at least 33% of cars sold by each manufacturer this year must be zero emission, which generally means pure battery electric. Mini's owner, BMW, has been approached for a comment.
Thames Water has confirmed an improved rescue bid has been tabled by creditors for the troubled supplier, but said talks are ongoing over the proposals. Britain's biggest water supplier, which has around 16 million customers, said bidding consortium London and Valley Water has put forward plans to inject 3.35 billion of new equity and up to 6.55 billion in new debt as it looks to secure backing for its deal. Thames Water said the proposal remains subject to ongoing review by the company, Ofwat, and other regulators, and subject to discussion with the company's financial stakeholders. Thames Water is hoping to secure the deal to stave off temporary nationalisation after being left on the brink of collapse by nearly £20 billion worth of debt. A rescue bid by Thames Water's creditors is seen as the final realistic option on the table to avoid being placed into the government's special administration regime. Administrators have already been lined up to step in if needed. As well as an equity and debt injection, the bid prevents Thames Water from paying dividends to shareholders before April 2035. It could only start to pay dividends before this date if it becomes a listed company, it said. The revised offer would also see the creditors accept up to 30% of the company's debt load being written off to help reduce the water firm's vast debt mountain. Its creditors are the bondholders, who now effectively own Thames Water.
A rental electric bike company has announced that the next generation of its line bikes are available in Oxford, as the company rolls out new ways to get around the city. Shared e-bike provider Lime has said the new bikes have been designed to tackle congestion in Oxford, which was cited as the city's biggest transport challenge by 49% of people in a recent poll run on behalf of the company. A limited rollout of rear cargo storage bikes is giving users more practical space to encourage them to switch from driving, after 30% of those polled said that extra storage would make e-bikes a more viable alternative for everyday journeys. Currently, a pilot scheme, there are a limited number of rear cargo storage bikes being introduced. The company said this latest launch in Oxford has come in direct response to what people say would help them switch from cars to e-bikes, including lowering e-bike hire prices. It's therefore launched a new subscription model, Lime Prime, in Oxford, to bring higher prices in line with or below public transport for a monthly fee of £2.99, which unlocks flat rates of £1 per ride under 5 minutes and £1.50 per ride under 20 minutes. The new generation bikes also include replaceable components to reduce waste and extend the vehicle's lifespan, ergonomic hand grips, and portrait-orientated secure phone holders for navigation. Councillor Emily Kerr, active transport champion for Oxfordshire, said, "I'm hugely excited about the potential for higher e-bikes and e-scooters in Oxford as a way for people to get around in an easy and environmental way. I just love trying the new Lime bike model, which felt light and nimble and had a decent space for me to put my handbag. Travelling by bike hire and scooter can get people quickly to their destinations, avoiding congestion and benefiting the environment. And micro-mobility operators are a key part of the transport mix to future cities." The new bikes also have enhanced GPS tracking to more accurately determine if they're parked in designated bays. Lime users are required to end trips with a bike left in a parking bay or bike rack, or neatly parked to the side of a pavement, depending on the location. Councillor Andrew Gant, Oxfordshire County Council Cabinet Member for Transport Management, said, "It's excellent to see a new generation of bikes reaching our streets that respond to feedback and open up a very practical and accessible travel option for more users. Giving people more choice and ways to make short trips in the city helps reduce traffic overall and is better for all of us."
Two Oxfordshire water campaigners, Ash Smith and Professor Peter Hammond of Windrush Against Sewage Pollution are the subject of a new Channel 4 drama, Dirty Business, and have reflected on their portrayal while outlining what they think should happen next. The three-part series premiered in February and has been critically acclaimed. Former police officer Mr. Smith said, "They turned quite a complicated story into one that is understandable, moving and disturbing, and making people angry, which I think it needs to do." Retired University College London academic Professor Hammond added that the series had captured the mood of the moment. He said, "It's got people sending thousands of emails, and we're slowly responding to them all." The series follows the story of the two detectives who noticed the fish in the river running through their West Oxfordshire hamlet are dying. Their investigations consistently reveal that untreated sewage is being pumped into local waterways by Thames Water, something which is still happening a decade on from their initial investigations. Over the last 3 months, according to Sewage Map, the Whitney Sewage Treatment Plant has pumped sewage into its local river for a combined 424 hours, Burford for 450 hours, and Bourton-on-the-Water for 1,428 hours. Mr. Smith has said the cause of this is the pursuit of money and that an urgent reset is needed. Privatisation has failed, he said. Thames Water should be brought straight back into public ownership. A benefit of doing this and wiping its debt would mean that 33 pence in a pound would be freed up instead of servicing interest payments, he added. Not only has Thames Water, which is the UK's biggest water company, faced criticism for sewage, but also for rising bills and its financial situation. Reportedly, it is more than £15 billion worth of net debt, with its creditors asking the regulator Ofwat to let it off from performance-related fines. A spokesperson for the water company said they were the first to publish real-time data on discharges and that they work closely with community groups, including WASP. A Thames Water spokesman said, "We understand that all untreated discharges, even when storm overflows are permitted under the conditions of an Environment Agency permit, are unacceptable. However, it's important to remember the sewage system was historically designed this way to prevent sewage backing up into people's homes. Taking action to improve the health of our rivers is a key focus for us, and that is why, over the next 5 years, we are delivering the most significant upgrade to the wastewater network in 150 years, including in West Oxfordshire." Both campaigners were keen to stress that many Thames Water employees work hard and that it is the system that is letting them and the public down.
More than 1,600 noise complaints were made by Oxford residents last year, with construction noise being the biggest offender. But enforcement action by the City Council is continuing to decline. A Freedom of Information request sent by the Local Democracy Reporting Service showed that out of 1,616 complaints made, only 30 enforcement notices were given out in 2025. Oxford City Council gave out £150 in fines in 2025 and raised no money at all from fines the previous year. Of these complaints, 460 were made due to commercial or construction noise. A number of construction projects are ongoing in the city, including the Botley Road Works near the rail station, the Ellison Institute in Littlemore, and the labs on Botley Road. Councillor David Henwood, who represents Rosehill and Iffley on the City Council, said, "The construction of the Ellison Institute is making the lives of people on Armstrong Road hellish. It's not unusual for the construction companies to ask to work on a Sunday. Residents' weekends should be protected." He added that the council should be asking applicants how they can mitigate noise impacts at the planning stage. Another 431 complaints were made due to loud music, 220 were because of parties, 159 were made because of arguing or shouting, and 120 were made about dogs. Other reasons for the complaints include busking, DIY, or alarms. There was a slightly higher number of noise complaints in 2024, at 1,718, with 50 enforcement notices being issued. But the overall trend in the past 5 years shows that the noise complaints have been on the rise, while enforcement notices have declined. In 2021, there were only 711 complaints, but there were 211 enforcement notices, as shown by a previous Freedom of Information request sent by the Oxford Mail. This jumped to 1,207 noise complaints in 2022, with 195 enforcement notices, while in 2023, there were 1,218 noise complaints and just 72 enforcement notices. Mr. Henwood said there needed to be more site visits from the antisocial behaviour team. He added, "If residents have reported it, we should be on the site investigating where that noise is coming from." Councillor Susanna Pressel, who represents the city for Osney and St Thomas area, said, "I'm shocked to hear that the noise complaints have gone up, but enforcement action has gone down. That is disappointing. I believe the noise department has been short-staffed recently, but we must make sure to remedy that. I'll be requesting an explanation." Residents can report noise complaints using the Noise app, which allows them to record the noise on their phone or tablet and send it direct to the council. Thames Valley Police are responsible for complaints about shouting or arguing in the street, fireworks, and vehicle noise such as car horns or noisy exhausts. Noise from pelican crossings is the responsibility of the County Council, while non-military air traffic noise should be reported to the Civic Aviation Authority.
The owners of Our Lady's Abingdon, which closed suddenly last year due to financial difficulties, are expected to sell off the school buildings in the summer. The private school in Radley Road was forced to close permanently for financial reasons, according to its governors, who sent letters to parents in August alerting them to the news. The statement of affairs submitted to Companies House revealed Our Lady's Abingdon Trustees Limited accumulated debts of £1,555,596 owed to 121 company creditors. Security measures were put in place to protect the buildings, and there was uncertainty about what would happen to the buildings in the long term and its facilities, including a swimming pool and surrounding playing fields. Now it is understood the buildings are expected to be sold during the summer by the owners, the Institute of Our Lady of Mercy. Oxford West and Abingdon MP Leila Moran said, "The closure of Our Lady's Abingdon was a real blow for the community. I would be delighted if the site were to continue as an educational institution to improve and expand access to education in the area." A spokesperson for the Institute of Our Lady of Mercy said, "Over the last 6 months, following the handover of the site from the liquidators, we have been working diligently to both clear and secure the Our Lady's Abingdon site, as well as reflect on how best the site can be used moving forward. Meetings are ongoing about the site's future, taking into account our obligations as a charity, and we are hopeful to be in a position to share more information in the early part of the summer. Following the closure announcement, schools across the county rallied to find places for more than 300 pupils, and they are now attending different schools across the county. In November, Ms. Moran wrote to Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson, urging the Department for Education to do more to protect families affected by sudden school closures. She said at the time, students, families and teachers were shocked by the sudden closure of Our Lady's Abingdon over the summer holidays. I saw the distress it caused to pupils and parents, particularly those completing their GCSEs and A-levels. I was pleased to see Oxfordshire County Council respond so quickly, given the difficult circumstances, and find school places for students. Now it appears the Institute will sell the school buildings, although it has declined to provide any details at this stage.
Hundreds of empty properties are being brought back into use. Councils in Oxfordshire are working with homeowners to address housing shortages and reduce long-term vacancies across the region. Over the past year, South Oxfordshire and Vale of Whitehorse District Councils have engaged with the owners of 854 empty properties to understand why homes remain unoccupied and to offer tailored support to bring them back into use. Of these, 232 properties, including 102 in South Oxfordshire and 130 in the Vale, are now lived in once again. Tony Wargan, Cabinet Member for Housing at South Oxfordshire District Council, said, "We are an area of high housing demand. Every property sitting empty is a wasted resource. Every property should become a home for someone who really needs it. We're making huge efforts to work with property owners to help bring these homes back into use and positively impact our work to provide the homes that people need now and in the future. We hope all the help we're offering property owners will be a real incentive to work with us to turn properties around." Currently, an estimated 1,162 properties remain empty in Oxfordshire, in South Oxfordshire and the Vale, although some are unoccupied for valid reasons such as major refurbishment or pending sale. Residents and property owners have welcomed the Council's efforts and support. A property owner from South Oxfordshire said, "The Empty Homes team were approachable and supportive, offering help which has enabled me to begin resolving issues that have prevented me from bringing my property back into use." Another homeowner said, "The Empty Home team provide helpful advice on available financial support, guidance on energy saving improvements, and assistance with council tax paperwork, giving me the confidence to start bringing my property back into use." Andy Crawford, Cabinet Member for Housing at Vale of Whitehorse District Council, said, "We've made some brilliant progress on working with empty homeowners, and there's huge potential to transform many more properties. We encourage people to continue to tell us if they know of a home standing empty in their neighbourhood." The councils offer a range of support to empty property owners, including advice on energy efficiency improvements, refurbishment assistance, information on VAT reductions for renovations, and options for renting or selling the property. More information about the scheme and how to report an empty property is available on the council's websites.
The owner of John Lewis and Waitrose has paid an annual bonus to workers for the first time in 4 years, after profits rose by 6%. The retail group's 69,000 employees, which it calls partners, will share £35 million, the equivalent of 2% of salary, after it recorded an increase in sales and profits. The payout amounts to about one extra week of pay. John Lewis at Westgate, Oxford, opened in 2017 as the revamped centre's anchor store, and there are Waitrose supermarkets across Oxfordshire. Sales at the John Lewis partnership rose 5% to 13.4 billion, and profits have increased to 134 million in the year to January the 31st, slightly behind expectations in what the chairman, Jason Tarry, called a subdued market. He said profits had been hit by £40 million in additional national insurance contributions and £13 million in new packaging levies, although its business rates bill did not increase. The company fell to a loss of £21 million before tax after one-offs, including the write-downs in the value of old technology. That compares with a profit of £97 million the year before. The company has not paid a bonus in four out of the previous 5 years, after suffering losses during the COVID pandemic, when it was forced to close all stores during lockdowns. The bonus peaked in the 1980s, hitting 24% of salary, but dropped to single digits in 2017, hitting the lowest level since the 1950s, as department stores started to come under pressure from the growth of online shopping. The company chose not to give a bonus last year despite tripling its annual profits. Mr. Tarry said, "Our multi-year plan to invest in customers and our brands for the long term is working. We have grown customer numbers and achieved record satisfaction. Despite a subdued market, a challenging lead into the crucial peak period and increased taxes, we took the decision to continue investing in the business and have delivered cash and profit growth." Peter Ruiz, the managing director of the John Lewis Arms, said it was tough out there and that people's budgets were challenged, but added that shoppers were prepared to spend on things they wanted. He said products from Topshop outlets in John Lewis had almost sold out following its launch, with sales well ahead of expectations, and that the stores were trying to quickly restock. The company is investing £800 million across its stores as part of a long-term investment. More than 20 Waitrose stores have been refurbished over the past year, as well as 5 John Lewis shops.
An art exhibition gives a powerful voice to lived experiences that are often overlooked. All Aboard, Journeys Across Access, Freedom and Belonging, is now on display at Oxford Parkway Station and features work by disabled and neurodiverse artists. Drawing on real-life experiences of using public transport, the artwork explores both the empowering aspects of travel and the barriers, structural and attitudinal, that many passengers still face. The exhibition was created by the Shadowlight Artists, a collective of learning disabled and artistic professional artists based in Oxfordshire, who produced the work through a series of art workshops. Bea Clarke, Access and Inclusion Programme Lead at the Oxfordshire and Gloucestershire Community Rail Partnership, GOCRP, said, "This exhibition gives disabled and neurodiverse people a platform to share their experiences of public transport in their own way through art. Too often, conversations about accessibility happen without the voices of the people most affected. All Aboard changes that, and we're proud to be placing those voices directly within the rail environment." The exhibition is part of OxCRP's wider efforts to improve inclusivity in rail transport by ensuring the perspectives of disabled people are embedded in rail development.
A primary school is facing a whistleblower tribunal from a former caretaker. Mark Stewart, 65, claims he was unable to find work for months after raising serious safety concerns about conditions at Langford Village Community Primary School in Peregrine Way, Bicester. These include fire safety failures, non-functioning emergency lighting, unsafe exits, and potential Legionella risks, which were later referred to the Health and Safety Executive. The former police officer said, "I had the impression from management that because I kept pushing safety and asking why things weren't being done, I became the issue, not the water, not the fire safety, not the lighting, me. I've worked in environments where safety really matters, so I wasn't trying to be awkward. I was doing what I'd always done in my working life, which is flag things that could hurt someone." A spokesman for the school said it does not recognise all of Mr. Stewart's claims. They added, "There is an ongoing contested legal process relating to these matters, and it would therefore not be appropriate to comment further at this stage." Mr. Stewart worked at the school for 6 months as a caretaker and said that after he raised his concerns, he was placed on gardening leave in December 2023. He was then informed that a complaint had been made against him, although he said that it would later emerge that no complaint was ever made. He resigned after receiving an alternative job offer, which was then withdrawn because of a poor employment reference from the school. Mr. Stewart said, "To see a reference saying that I was the issue, that I was a dissatisfied worker, I just couldn't reconcile it with reality." 3 decades in the police, years in schools, and suddenly you're defending whether you're competent or trustworthy. That's the damage. It casts a shadow over your working life, not just the one job. The situation took a serious toll on his health and family life, with prolonged anxiety, persistent insomnia, and mounting financial pressure at home. The case is now set to be heard at an employment tribunal at the end of March as a whistleblowing detriment claim. He is represented by Oxfordshire employment law firm Magara Law. Roy Magara, solicitor advocate and founder of Magara Law, said, "Whistleblowing law exists to protect workers who raise legitimate concerns in the public interest, especially where the safety of children is involved. When someone is punished for speaking up about a basic safety issue in a school environment, it sends a deeply worrying message and discourages others from raising concerns." Mr. Stewart said, "He decided to speak publicly, not only for his own case, but because of the wider implications for other workers."
A night of comedy has raised £51,000 for charity. The Helen and Douglas House Charity Comedy Gala took place at Oxford's New Theatre on Monday, March the 9th, and raised funds for terminally ill children and their families. An audience of 1,622 people attended the event. Joe Manners from Woodstock, who was one of them, said, "What a fantastic night of comedy for such a great cause. I felt so lucky we had such a brilliant lineup of comics giving us a hilarious evening of non-stop laughter. It was also heartwarming to hear from the father of one of the families who've used Helen and Douglas House for their son. His words were a powerful reminder of why events like this are so essential. They fund the support so even more families can be cared for. The evening's raising of £51,000 includes the money raised through the raffle on the night. Charlotte Barmley from Helen and Douglas House said, "Thank you to everyone who bought a ticket and joined us for a laughter-filled night, and to the Oxford New Theatre team. It's a real privilege and highlight organising this event with the incredible Matt Richardson. Matt hosts the event and books the lineup with everyone giving up their time free." She also thanked businesses that donated raffle prizes and singled out Mr. Cole, whose family used the charity's services, for sharing his story during the event. Mrs. Barmley said, "I want to say a massive thank you to Matt, Zoe Lyons, Scott Bennett, Laura Smith, Andrew White, Finn Taylor, Andrew Bird, and Ed Byrne for supporting the event." Daryl Cole's son, Jago, died at Helen and Douglas House, aged just 18 months old. And speaking at the gala, Mr. Cole described the charity's support during his family's bereavement, including offering them the time and space to say goodbye to Jago and providing one-to-one sessions to help them navigate their grief. Helen and Douglas House is a hospice that cares for terminally ill children and supports their families, and donations can be made to them via hdh.org.uk.
Staff at a city special needs school have raised concerns over 90 home plans on its doorstep. Oxfordshire County Council applied to build the homes on Iffley Mead, a section of land it owns next to the Iffley Academy. The land used to be a playing field owned by St. Augustine of Canterbury School, which closed in 2005. And since then it has been fenced off and left in an overgrown state. The plans for new homes have had several objections on the planning portal, including from Sport England and Friends of Iffley Village. Now the Iffley Academy itself has submitted comments. Karen Shaw, chair of the local academy board at the Iffley Academy, said, "Iffley Academy is a SEND school for 180 students with varying degrees of special needs and vulnerabilities. The majority of the pupils come to school in County Council transport, which equates to some 60 taxis accessing the site Monday to Thursday between 8:30 a.m. and 9:10 a.m. and then again between 2:30 p.m. and 3:10 p.m. On Friday, the afternoon pick-up is between 1:30 p.m. and 2:10 p.m. This is in addition to parent carer transport. This already causes significant disruption in Augustine Way, without additional construction traffic, both for deliveries and construction worker parking. I also have concerns over the present boundary with the school, which I believe is the local authority's responsibility. It is in a poor state of repair, and I worry that some of our students may try to access the site once they see construction is underway, which would be a serious health and safety issue." Head teacher Yvette Fay added, "Iffley Academy is a SEND school for 180 students. Our students face additional vulnerabilities, and safeguarding them during proposed building work is a key concern. At the moment, the perimeter fence on this side of the school, I believe to be an OCC fence, falling down. With building materials and equipment needing to be within the adjacent space, I would have concerns regarding safety and safeguarding without the fence being secure and safe. There is an increased risk of a student being able to access this area when dysregulated. Under the plans, a minimum of 84 homes would be built, and 50% of them would be affordable homes. The site is close to separate plans for 32 homes on Iffley Meadows, where the City Council's social housing company, Oxplace, wants to build up to 32 homes. These plans were first submitted in 2022, but have stalled since then after facing opposition from locals. Iffley Mead has had no formal use after it stopped being used as a playing field, other than as a construction compound for works association with the school in 2020. Oxford Civic Society said they welcomed the provision of housing, but that some central green space should be provided within it.
An Oxford private school's restrictive phone policy has boosted joy, according to its head teacher. The warden, head teacher, of St Edward's School in Woodstock Road, said its recently introduced mobile rules have not only improved pupils' happiness, but also boosted its sports teams and music groups. Alistair Churnside of the boarding school for children aged 13 and older said they had been ahead of the curve on mobile phones. He said, "Back in 2022, we changed our mobile phone rules and we tightened them up further in 2023. Now, pupils in years 9 and 10 only have access to their mobiles between Saturday lunchtime and Sunday evening, and not overnight. In year 11, the rules are the same, except children are allowed access to their phones for a couple of hours on Tuesday and Thursday. And in sixth form, the pupils get their phones at lunchtime and have to hand them back in the evening. We're incredibly restrictive in the lower schools," said Mr. Churnside, "and pretty restrictive in the sixth form. There's no child in our boarding school who has access to their phone overnight." Calling the benefits of this policy massive, the warden said that there has been a major increase in children playing school sport. He said, "Participation in school sport is north of 90% of pupils representing the school in competitive sport, which is an amazing number. We've seen a huge increase in the number of pupils involved in music, about a quarter of an increase or so in that. But the increases with which we've been most pleased have been the measures of the children's happiness. St Edward's, Teddy's, surveys its pupils every year, asking the same questions to get points of comparison." Mr Churnside said in the year they tightened up phone rules, they saw a 10% point rise in happiness. "We're having a much more fulfilling experience of school," said the warden. "They're much happier as a result." Teddy's is not the only county school to have restricted phone access, with Oxford Spires Academy and Aureus School in Didcot also introducing partial mobile bans. Last year, the head teacher of King Alfred's Academy in Wantage reported that a ban on phones at school had helped behaviour at the school. Introduced in September 2024, phones are locked in yonder pocket pouches with a magnetic pin on entry to the school. Keeping the pouch with them throughout lessons, on leaving, the pupils tap the pouch on the unlocking base and get their phone back. "That's been brilliant," said head teacher Jonathan Smart, "in terms of kids connecting with each other and having to talk to each other."
A 2012 Olympic-style regeneration initiative will be launched in Oxford to help transform its shared region with Cambridge into Britain's answer to Silicon Valley, Rachel Reeves will reveal. The Chancellor is expected to announce plans for a Greater Oxford Development Corporation in the coming week, the Treasury said. A similar development corporation for Cambridge was launched earlier this year. The authorities will help the two university cities and their surrounding regions build new infrastructure as the government aims to boost economic growth across the area. Ms Reeves is expected to announce the Greater Oxford Development Corporation ahead of giving this year's Mace Lecture, a speech which will reportedly focus on the government's growth mission. The so-called Oxford-Cambridge Corridor is one of the only UK regions outside of London which is a net contributor to Britain's economy. Ministers hope they can spark further economic growth by supporting the technology, manufacturing and research sectors in the area between the two university cities. New house building and transport links between Oxford, Cambridge and other major settlements like Milton Keynes and Bedford are among the measures which are being slowly rolled out to achieve this. The Chancellor will back the two development corporations by doubling the funding available to buy land and build infrastructure from £400 million up to £800 million. A Treasury spokesman said, "Our plans for the Oxford-Cambridge corridor are ambitious. The prize on offer is to have the Silicon Valley of Europe here in Britain, bringing more jobs and more vibrant places to live. We have the right economic plan, and this week the Chancellor will set out how the regions are crucial to the next decade of growth." Development corporations have previously been used to spearhead major regeneration projects in Britain, including the Olympic Park in Stratford, East London. They have, however, been criticised as undemocratic and unaccountable, as they take planning powers away from local councils. Ms Reeves announced a £500 million investment package into the scheme in October last year, including £120 million for the Kiley branch line to be reopened in Oxfordshire. The Chancellor says the corridor could add £78 billion to the UK's economy by 2035 and has committed to funding for the East-West rail link, joining the cities which host the country's two top universities and the towns such as Bedford and Milton Keynes, which sit between them.
Targeted efforts to tackle health inequalities are beginning to have a visible impact in Oxfordshire. That's the message from Oxfordshire County Council's Director of Public Health, Ansaf Azar, in his latest annual report, which highlights reductions in deprivation across some of the county's most disadvantaged communities since 2019. In that year, the Index of Multiple Deprivation, IMD, data identified 10 areas in Oxfordshire amongst the most deprived 20% nationally. By October 2025, the most recent data showed that the number had fallen to 8. Mr. Azar said, "5 years on from my first annual report, some are more equal than others. This year's report is a moment to pause, reflect, and most importantly, to be clear about what comes next. The latest data show encouraging signs in areas where sustained, targeted effort has been focused, particularly in wards that have faced the greatest disadvantage. That matters because it tells us that long-term, locally grounded work is beginning to influence the wider conditions that shape people's health." Mr. Azar stressed that the positive trends are the result of collective action rather than any single program or organization. He said, "This is about correlation, not simple cause and effect. No single program or organization can claim credit for these shifts. But what we can say with confidence is that where partners have worked together, listened to communities, and invested consistently over time, we are starting to see movement in the right direction." However, the report notes that progress is not uniform across the county. Some areas outside the original 10 priority communities have seen small increases in deprivation, despite starting from a higher baseline of affluence. He said, "Inequality is not static, and progress in one place does not mean the job is done elsewhere. This is exactly why nuanced interpretation of the data matters, and why a countrywide informed approach is so important." Mr. Azar warned that the progress made so far remains fragile and could be lost without ongoing support. He emphasised the importance of staying focused, especially as Oxfordshire pursues its commitment to becoming a marmot county, that is, an area dedicated to reducing health inequalities through long-term preventative action. He said the gains we are seeing are fragile, and without sustained investment, we risk losing momentum, eroding trust, and undoing years of careful relationship building in communities that need stability most. My call to action is simple. Use this evidence, back partnership working, and help us keep going at the very moment when progress is starting to show. This year's report is available on an interactive online format to improve accessibility for residents, partners, and practitioners.
A Cotswold town in West Oxfordshire has been named among the most beautiful in the UK for 2026. Burdford is a small medieval market town set on the River Windrush on the edge of the Cotswold Hills, about 19 miles west of Oxford. Often described as the gateway to the Cotswolds, it is known for its steep high street lined with historic stone houses and a medieval bridge over the Windrush. The town's population is around 1,500, and the Top Gear presenter Jeremy Clarkson's pub, The Farmer's Dog, can be found in nearby Astle. Burford has now been named among the UK's most beautiful places, according to a new ranking for 2026. The list has been put together by global travel site Big Seven Travel, which has named its picks for the top 50 spots in the country, beating the likes of the Gower Peninsula in Wales, Fountains Abbey in North Yorkshire, and Luskin Tower Beach. Burford was ranked in 28th position. The Oxfordshire village of Burford is known for its quiet and elegant charm, with a multitude of medieval buildings, including antique shops and traditional pubs. The classic Cotswold stone architecture is what keeps visitors coming back time and time again, as well as its prime location as a great base to explore other Cotswold villages, given the number of walking routes that are available nearby.
Hundreds more organs could be saved for transplant every year, thanks to preservation techniques being trialled by NHS doctors at the Oxford Transplant Centre. It is running a pilot, along with other transplant centres in Oxford, to keep donor organs preserved for longer, so checks can be carried out to see whether they are suitable for transplant. At present, there is not always enough time to carry out tests on organs before they need to be used. This means that doctors are not always confident about accepting them for operations. If successful, the pilot would lead to the first full national network in the world for reconditioning organs. Under the scheme, up to 750 more organ transplants could be carried out every year, a 19% rise on current figures. This could include up to 202 more liver transplants being carried out, up to 202 more lung transplants, and up to 345 additional kidney transplants. Perfusion is a technique for circulating oxygenated blood or nutrient-rich fluids through organs, preserving their function and enabling more time for them to be assessed. NHS Blood and Transplant, NHSBT, says changes are needed to save more organs owing to the high record transplant waiting list, which is consistently over 8,000 people. The potential donor pool is also falling as people live longer and have long-term health conditions. Derek Manus, Medical Director for Organ and Tissue Donation and Transplant at NHSBT, said the aim is to create centres of excellence that will benefit patients across the country. What the perfusion machines will do is give us more time to keep the organs viable. So you can keep the organs on a machine until the theatre is available, until surgeons are available, until anaesthetic staff are available, and so on. The length of time will depend on each organ. The heart still probably has the least extended time. At the moment, in a box of ice, you've got about 3 hours at the most. But with machine perfusion, you've got 8 hours and probably longer. For livers, you can probably extend the time to 12 to 24 hours. We're not sure exactly how long we can extend the time for, but it will certainly make a significant difference to transplants. Dr. Zubair Ahmed, the government's Health Innovation and Safety Minister, said, "This programme could mean saving and transforming hundreds of lives that otherwise might have been lost. As a transplant surgeon, I know firsthand what that can mean for patients and families, and I am proud that the UK is leading the world in this approach."
Oxford is now quieter and with cleaner air, research has suggested. The introduction of 159 electric buses to serve the Oxford area has led to significant reductions in air and noise pollution. In 2023, a deal worth £82.5 million was agreed between Oxfordshire County Council, the government, Oxford Bus Company and Stagecoach to fund the fleet of new battery electric vehicles. Provisional data suggests that bus fleet electrification has reduced roadside citywide nitrogen dioxide concentrations across Oxford by an average of 10% from 2023 to 2024, and up to 24% in areas of high bus traffic, such as St Aldates and High Street. The transition from diesel to electric buses also cut roadside traffic-related noise in central Oxford by an average of 5.1 decibels. Comparable to the reduction in noise you would experience by moving three times further away from a road. Andrew Gant, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Transport Management, said, "We are proud and thrilled that we were able to back our ambitions with political and financial capital alongside our partners to deliver a safer, cleaner, greener, better county for residents and visitors. This provisional data shows what a difference these electric buses are making to people's lives already." The analysis was carried out by the National Institute for Health and Care Research, which investigated air and noise pollution changes before, during and after the introduction of battery electric buses in Oxford. In Oxfordshire, the County Council contributed £6 million and secured £32.8 million from the Department for Transport. This was supplemented by £43.7 million from the two commercial bus operators to support the introduction of 159 battery electric buses across 34 routes in Oxford city centre and the surrounding areas, plus the sightseeing buses. At full implementation, electric buses account for 69% of daily bus mileage within the city and 49% of daily bus flow. Luke Marion, Oxford Bus Company Managing Director, said he is proud of the significant contribution by the business. "The whole community is positively benefiting from this ambitious infrastructure project, which demonstrates what can be achieved when key stakeholders have a shared vision and work together." Oxford Bus Company will introduce a further 13 electric buses this spring. Chris Hanson, Managing Director of Stagecoach West, added, "These buses are delivering greener, zero-emission journeys right across the city's network, while also offering a noticeably smoother, quieter and more comfortable experience for our customers. The response from passengers has been overwhelmingly positive, and just as importantly, this investment marks a vital step towards our pledge to operate a fully zero-emission fleet by 2035. In Oxford City, air pollution has fallen in recent years. But while legal limits are widely met across the city, levels still exceed World Health Organization global air quality guidelines.
A St. Patrick's Day party at a city brewery proved a smash hit with rugby, live music, dancing, and its supply of Murphy's Irish Stout selling out. Tap Social Movement hosted the St. Paddy's Day party at its Botley Tap Rooms on Saturday the 14th of March, ahead of the official Irish feast day, and it was hailed a rip-roaring success. After the Ireland team won their Six Nations match against Scotland, the taproom hosted revellers for dancing, music, beer and a best-dressed contest. Harry Househam, events manager for Tap Social, said it was a rip-roaring and jam-packed day with non-stop crack. The Ireland team won their match against Scotland, which really got things off to a great start and set the tone. After the Irish victory, the day was followed by non-stop live music and dancing, and we burnt some Irish turf incense to get the venue really feeling like a traditional Irish pub. The stout taps were flowing all night. We sold out of Murphy's Irish Stout, and our own locally brewed Gold Award winning stout Inside Out was also a smash hit. The post-game music started with a fiddle and guitar performance from Rebecca Milam and Jonathan Yeep, followed by the Oxford Fiddle Group playing traditional Irish songs accompanied by a harp, guitar, squeeze box and accordion. Then came Marion Flanagan Irish Dance School, who wowed the crowds with their river dance, followed by headliners The Publicans, an Irish folk band who kept the audience jigging. The best-dressed winner walked away with a real four-leaf clover, and Tato Crisps were declared the winner in a Tato versus King Crisps popularity contest. Mr. Houseman added, "Tap Social is greatly proud to host an eclectic mix of weird and wonderful live events which celebrate local communities and offer a vibrant place to eat and drink." Just 12 hours after our St. Patrick's celebration, we had our regular live wrestling league with United Wrestling. It's a really great space with a busy lineup of fun events, and we love celebrating Paddy's Day as part of it. Founded in 2016 by Ms. Taylor, her sister Tess Taylor, and Paul Humperson, Tap Social provides training and employment to people moving through the criminal justice system. The enterprise has delivered more than 100,000 hours of fairly paid work to prison leavers and people on release on temporary licence. It currently operates the Proof Social Bakehouse in Kennington, the organisation's former refitted brewery, as well as Bar Lock 29 in 29, and the Market Tap by Tap Social in Oxford's Covered Market. A new venue, Day Release, is set to launch at Signal Yard in Milton Park this year, the fifth Oxfordshire venue, which will bring all the Tap Social brands together in one location.
That was everything for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, you can telephone Margaret on 07496-062280. That is 07496-062280. Please remember to leave your name and contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available on our website www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. You can also listen on an Alexa device through the Talking Newspaper skills. If you need advice on these, please phone the main Oxtalk number. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday with more news. So until then, we hope you have a good week.